We have such a diversity of wildlife in our state, and it's always fun to talk about our wildlife. And I think especially this time of year, it's particularly a lot of fun. There's so much going on in the outdoors. That's why I'm really pleased to have with us today David Drake, wildlife specialist with UW Extension and associate professor of forest and wildlife ecology. David, great to have you back.
Larry, it's always nice to be on your show. Thank you.
And Jamie Knack, outreach specialist with the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. And Jamie, thank you so much for coming by as well.
You're welcome, and it's wonderful to be here.
We have so much to talk about, and I think, you know, in recent shows, well, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the birds starting to move and the migration, and I think this recent change in the temperature has sort of upped the speed of the migration, Jamie.
Yeah, fall is definitely here, and we had a pretty significant swing in temperatures over the last week, and it looks like that's going to hold, although we've got a nice weekend shaping up here, too. But certainly migration is underway, and I think David will get into a little bit as far as raptors go, what we're seeing. But did you want to mention the chimney swifts?
I was going to say that the chimney swifts are migrating now, and there's an opportunity for everybody listening to participate.
Yeah, we thought we'd highlight the chimney swift. So it's a blackish-gray bird. It's cigar-shaped. It has slightly curved, narrow wings and a pretty stubby tail. It sounds that when it vocalizes, it has a rapid ticking or twittering note and a very distinct wing beat or flight pattern, so really rapid wing beat. And it flies in circular patterns overhead in many of the urban cities and towns, much like a swallow would, and it's because they have the same diet. They're eating insects, catching insects out of the air. And we've noticed chimney swift populations have declined significantly in recent decades, and there's a new effort underway by a group called the Wisconsin Chimney Swift Working Group. And it's a group of about a dozen members of organizations throughout the state that have gotten together and are encouraging folks to report chimney swift sightings and locations of nesting or roosting habitat. So traditionally, chimney swifts would roost in hollow trees or cliffs. And because we've lost some of that habitat, almost entirely, chimney swifts select for man-made structures like chimneys and use those for their home in the summer. Obviously, they're not being used by humans at that time, but they're roosting in them during the night and then having their young or build their nests inside them as well. So the gist of the citizen science opportunity is right now, particularly in southern Wisconsin, from mid-September to the end of September, if you notice chimney swifts in your urban in your area flying around, is to document or watch for them to funnel in to a chimney and report those sightings through eBird. Or you can also just search for the Wisconsin Chimney Swift Working Group, and you'll find the press release on how to report your sightings. But they're looking for citizens to help detect where these chimney swifts are utilizing these structures so that they can better document their populations.
I think we have a link to eBird at least, so people can always go to my Facebook page if they want to do that.
Yep.
As well.
So if you do get out and it's a great family activity on one of these beautiful nights coming up, and with eBird, then you just want to in the comment section add the notes about the location, and then they want you to count how many of the chimney swifts are utilizing that particular structure, and it's usually easiest if you can kind of count in fives as they're pouring in. It's hard to count them individually. So,
talking today with David Drake and Jamie Knack about the world of wildlife, and certainly inviting your questions and comments. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Another citizen science project and monitoring project is for hunters, and not only hunters, but just others who are just out in our state's natural areas.
Yep, there are obviously now with the fall and the hunting seasons that are starting. Starting with black bear on September 3rd, I think, and just this past Saturday we had an archery season for deer start and some of the small game seasons. And fall turkey. And so there's going to be a lot of people out in the woods, more so than any other time of the year, where you have this many concentrated people. And so the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is asking everybody who's in the woods. And again, as you mentioned, Larry, be it hunters or non-hunters, if you're just out for a walk in the woods or bird watching or walking your dog or whatever the case is, that if you see something in the woods, wildlife-related, they would like you to go to a website and go ahead and record that sighting. And even if you don't see something, they would also like to know that, because that's also a helpful piece of information. And so you can go to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources page, if you can just Google that. And once you're on that page, you can go to their internal search engine and type in the keyword deer hunter wildlife. And then there's a form that will come up, and you can populate that form with what you saw. And again, they're interested in where you saw it, so location, and when you saw it, so date and time and things like that. And there's some pretty interesting things that, you know, as you're wandering around out there, you can see some pretty interesting wildlife and a lot of unexpected stuff, which is kind of fun. And then one other thing that they've got going on, they have a game camera survey going on. The DNR was not only lending out game cameras for a little bit of time and putting them out themselves on both public and private land, but obviously these game cameras have taken off, and a lot of people use them for sighting wildlife on their property. And so you can also upload pictures to the DNR website as well.
So, yeah, and that's kind of fun, because you can go and look and see what other people have posted, which is, you know, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, and the keywords for that, you're probably going to get it if you search under trail camera gallery or photos. And it is, they have some of them categorized by species, and it's pretty interesting to see the photos. There's moose on there last time I was there, and gray fox and bobcat, you know, species that not everybody sees all that frequently. So it's fun to see what the public turns in.
Well, you know, one of the nice things too is we get a lot of calls a lot of times, especially about cougars, for example. So, you know, and this was before 2006 or so, before, you know, they actually verified a cougar sighting in Wisconsin, so we get all these calls about cougars, but there is no better thing than a picture of a cougar to say that, you know, absolutely we had a cougar here, and as they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and so it does also capture those very, very rare wildlife events that help to verify that an animal sighting was actually, you know, did occur.
And somebody on Facebook on my page actually posted that the couple of linemen thought they saw a cougar and two cubs.
In the location, I believe, was it Roxbury?
Roxbury, yeah.
Yeah, so that's near Middleton. You know, maybe not. We'd never say never in the world of wildlife. It turns around and bites you. So, but I can give you some historical, you know, data as far as cougars go. We've documented at least 6 individuals through DNA evidence, both by scat or by hair or blood samples, as these animals have shown up on trail cameras and been reported by the public, and biologists have been able to track them and collect some of those samples. They all track back to the Black Hills population of cougars in South Dakota. And every individual animal that's been documented here in Wisconsin has been a young male cougar. So to this point, not to discount that observation, but that would be a first. We do not have records of any females in the state or breeding populations. And what I would encourage that individual to do is contact their local wildlife biologist to discuss that sighting a little bit. And then they can make the determination if a further site visit is appropriate.
Yeah, and you know, one of the reasons that we keep seeing these young males in Wisconsin is that South Dakota population, South Dakota's got very good cougar habitat, and that population is growing. And as the young males, when they get about a year and a half or 2 years old, the mom kicks them out of the territory. So they have to kind of go find their own way. And they're coming into areas that are unoccupied. And that's one of those areas is Wisconsin. But one of the neatest cougar stories we've had since they've been sighted in Wisconsin again was in 2009-10. There was a cougar that came out of South Dakota and then came around the north of the Twin Cities, across the St. Croix River into Wisconsin. And Jamie was talking about some of the DNA from scat, which is, you know, nice term for poop, and some of the hair. But in June of 2010, they had a whole animal that they had access to for DNA, because this cougar had moved from South Dakota and eventually had gotten killed by a car in Connecticut, about 30 miles from the Atlantic Ocean. And so it was the longest known straight distance of over 1,000 miles. And so they actually had that animal, could test the DNA, and they matched it up to the scat and the hair that they had as that animal was tracking from South Dakota all the way out to the East Coast.
That's amazing. It's an amazing adventure how that animal got across all those roads.
Yep. Yeah. Isn't the Great Lakes and
yeah, and everything else. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. You can join in. I wonder if we're having trouble with our phones today. Because I don't have a single call. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Usually our phone lines just light right up when these two characters are on. Do you have a we have a wildlife sighting or a wildlife question or an experience to share? Join us again, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, you know, birds aren't the only critters winging their way south. Some bats are as well. I know we're going to be talking with Jennifer Riddell in the next couple of weeks about bats, but certainly they're moving too, aren't they,
yep,
David?
They sure are. So we at one point had 8 bat species in Wisconsin, but the federally endangered Indiana bat hasn't been seen in Wisconsin since probably about the early 1960s. So for all intents and purposes, we have 7 species that are calling Wisconsin home. 4 of those are state resident species, and we'll start looking for places to hibernate for the winter because they stay here for the winter. And obviously, there's no food for them. As being insectivores, there's no insects available for them for the winter, so they hibernate. 3 of our bat species will migrate, and those animals will have been going south since about the mid-July and will continue to do so for maybe another couple weeks or so. And then they'll come back into our state in the springtime as well. So, yep, so we've got bat migration going on. And then even amongst our resident bat species that hibernate, we've got short-distance migration amongst those 4 species. So you'll see them moving north and south a little bit as the fall starts getting cooler here.
Nelson in Madison has a comment or a question. Hi, Nelson. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Say a friend of mine who lives in Cherokee, you know, north of Madison, on the north side of Madison, says that one morning, early in the morning, she was out and she saw what she believed to be a wolf. And I said, well, probably coyote. She said, no, I know coyotes. It was definitely a wolf. And I checked the track, and it was a wolf track. Now, she's not a wildlife biologist, but how feasible is that?
Well, Nelson, it's a great question. We do get these sightings, you know, from time to time, or inquiries from the public wondering if it could be. Certainly with things like fisher, wolves, bobcat, bears, those are all things that we do see from time to time in the southern part of the state. We're not in traditional wolf range in the southern portion. They're primarily central and northern forest. But again, just like the cougar conversation we just had, there are males of wolves that have been seen in the southern part of the state as they have been pushed out and are looking to establish their own territories and packs. So I'm familiar with Cherokee Marsh, and I would consider that to be very high quality coyote habitat. So I too would have probably first suggested a coyote. And looking at tracks, depending on the substrate, if it's mud, it could make that track, as the animal depresses its foot, could make it appear larger than it was. So the substrate can affect the look of the track. And I mean, it's also possible there's, you know, a lot of people that walk dogs in Cherokee Marsh. You know, it's possible, but the fact that it probably wasn't on a leash, I'm assuming, I would tend to think coyote. But of course, you know, a wolf is a possible, you know, observation, but not as likely.
Mm-hmm. And I will just mention, with all that being said, and I would agree with Jamie 100% on that, but there was a confirmed wolf sighting in the Mazamani area earlier this summer. And
yeah,
I'm not sure.
That was a few months ago.
That was a few months ago. And I'm not sure if that wolf is still around or where it went. But, you know, and we've had them down in this area before. So never say never, as we said earlier. But I would agree with Jamie, it's most likely a coyote.
Yeah. And the other thing we had for the first time this far south was the Columbia County biologists had done a wolf howl survey for wolves in the area. In northern Columbia County, there were some reports from the public that they were hearing wolves, and she put a crew together and did a survey and had a response by adult wolves and also pups. So it's the first documentation of a breeding pack or group of wolves in Columbia County.
Yeah.
So that was not too far from there.
David Drake and Jamie Nack, our guests today, as we talk about the world of wildlife. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, talking about the world of wildlife with Jamie Knack and David Drake of the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. Jerry in Appleton has something for us. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, good morning. I was on Highway 26 going south out of Rosendale on Saturday morning in a plowed field where five sandhills and a large, white, red-headed crane that I can only believe was a whooping crane.
Yeah. Nothing more, Jerry?
Oh, that,
no,
oh,
more help to us?
So no, it had a redhead?
It very well could be, you know, the Operation Migration is that the crane migration for whooping cranes that the International Crane Foundation and others do, where they follow or they train the whooping crane young to follow the ultralight airplane south for their first fall migration. And that is, I think, going on now. It would be unusual, I think, for them not to know where all those whooping cranes are, because they keep very good control of where they are and are very vigilant about where all they are, especially when they're going south. But there are not many other big white birds with red heads in the state of Wisconsin, and we do have whooping cranes here. So it is very possible, and it is not unusual, especially as you go into Florida and into Texas where the whooping cranes winter, that you will have these mixed flocks of sandhill cranes and whooping cranes. So it is very, very possible. Jerry, the one thing I will say, and I'm not aware of that sighting that you just mentioned, but the only thing I would offer up to you if you want to follow up is Google International Crane Foundation in Baraboo and give them a call and just ask if on the day you saw it, was there a whooping crane in that area? And they should be able to confirm or refute that.
Interesting.
And they'd probably be pretty darn interested in the observations.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. They don't, you know, I have a little farm over in Valders, and we have a large population of sandhills. So I'm real aware of what a sandhill looks like. And I looked in the field and said to my wife, there's five sandhills there, but there's this big white one. We actually stopped and looked at it. It was strange to me because I've never witnessed any big white crane that big before.
Yep, and you know the benefit of having those sandhills there, obviously, is that you have the reference point in terms of size and shape and look to compare it to the whooping crane. And again, you know, there are not many big white birds like that in the state of Wisconsin, and especially if you're looking at a whooping crane and a sandhill crane together, it's relatively hard to make that confusion. So I would call the International Crane Foundation and just see what they say about that.
And as a matter of fact, the International Crane Foundation, what a great place. If you haven't seen all of the cranes, I mean, what a great place to go and see what they all look like, what they're all like. And we were there not that long ago and went around to each of the sort of the pen areas that are in a kind of a circle.
Yeah.
And as we walked up to each fence, the cranes that were in the fence would walk all the way up to the fence.
Yep. It is pretty amazing.
Yeah, there's some pretty beautiful
specimens. You're looking at them from a foot away,
mm-hmm.
2 feet away.
And I think that they've got a representative sample of every crane species in the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really cool. Thanks again, Jerry, for calling. Appreciate it. Carmen in McHenry, Illinois, your turn next. Hi, Carmen.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
There's been quite a bit of animal sighting down here. Cougars have been seen by the Channel Oak Point State Park at 173 in the Fox River. That's in northern Illinois, west of Antioch, east of Richmond. They've been seen there for more than a few years. There's a mounted wolf at Channel Lake State Park. I think it said a young male that was hit by a car. I don't remember. Channel Lake State Park is off of Wilmont Road. And I personally saw a wolf on Bull Valley Road between McHenry and Woodstock in 1995. It was a young wolf. I'm aware of the size. I've seen them, been in most of the national parks looking at them and stuff. So there's quite a bit of wildlife down here.
Yeah.
And the wolf thing, if you want a documentation, I mean, that's at Channel Lake State Park.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there's certainly, you know, lots of sightings of these animals, and they do occasionally move through. They're using river corridors and functions of the landscape to move, and, you know, again, they're searching out new habitats. So,
yeah, good points. Thank you very much for calling. Darren in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I had a question and then just one quick comment I'll say first regarding the whooping crane sighting. I also saw about three whoopers off of Highway D at the intersection of Washera County and Adams. That was about 3 weeks ago, and 100% positive they were whooping cranes, and they were also near some other sandhills. It's kind of in the near the Buena Vista chicken marsh or prairie chicken habitat.
Prairie chicken, yep. Yeah.
And just to back that guy up. And then also my question was if you have some good recommendations for places to see migration, big migrations aside from Horicon or any other good migrating bird or hawk sites that you could see from the water in southern Wisconsin, like something kayakable.
Okay. So, Darren, one other thing I want to make sure listeners are aware of is eBird. And if you do an internet search for Wisconsin eBird, that's a website that the public, avid birders, can go in and document their sightings. And then it will show by date and location the different sightings. So I imagine if we were to call that up, that we would see these whooping cranes showing up because other birders are reporting them. So that is also a good source for you for the question that you're asking about places near Madison to see birds. But I would suggest Picnic Point and Lakeshore Nature Preserve as kayakable in terms of Lake Mendota. And then I'm thinking over by Tenney Park, the channel there. Cherokee Marsh would be one.
Yeah.
Pheasant Branch Conservancy up in the northern part of the city. The other place that is really, really good for shorebirds in particular is off of Southtown Road at the Madison Sewage District or water treatment plant down there.
Nine Springs,
because they draw those ponds down both in the spring and the fall, and you can just load up on shorebirds coming through there.
You wouldn't be able to kayak there, but you would be able to see them from the road.
Yep, that'd be a great place.
And one other sighting that we had at Cherokee Marsh about 2 weeks ago was, if I'm not mistaken, a black rail, which sounds like pretty rare around here, but I compared it to every other rail possibility. Is that something you could see feasible?
Yeah, possibly. I'd probably dive into eBird again and just see what the birders are reporting. So I know there's been some pretty interesting things. If you get all the way over to Lake Michigan, too, along the coast, you're going to see a lot more variety, parasitic jaegers and a bunch of gulls and seabirds migrating through.
Darren, did you see or hear the black rail, or both?
See, not hear at all. I know typically you can hear them. The year before that, I saw a sore rail on the opposite side of the marsh. And this year, it was like just 2 weeks ago, it was a Wednesday night at about 7 o'clock. And tiny little guy, and I saw him right at the edge of the cattails and the kind of a floating mat.
Yeah, it's possible. You know, at this time of the year and again in the spring, when things start migrating, you'll see birds that typically you wouldn't see here because they're coming through on migration. So it is possible.
Right.
Sure. Why not?
Right. Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, thanks, Darren, for calling. Nick in Green Bay. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. Oh, God, this is horrible. I was fixing the garage door yesterday. I know I heard the turkeys calling a few times last week, which wasn't a big deal, but then my daughter just started bawling, and I looked behind her, and there's three turkeys chasing her across the lawn, and they don't seem to back down from her because she's so short, and I heard they can be kind of nasty at their talons. It was kind of humorous to watch it, but it wouldn't have been so humorous if she would have fell or anything, because I don't know what they would have done, but how do we avoid this? My friend told me just get a BB gun and shoot them, but I don't want to hurt them. But
don't do that.
I'm like right in town. It's not like I live in the country, but I mean, it's just crazy because you see this blonde little girl running across the front lawn, and here there's three turkeys going after her. I was just like, I couldn't imagine. I didn't know what to think. I was like, holy crap.
Wow.
Well, turkeys are an interesting bird, and they have done a phenomenal job of adapting to what we call human-dominated landscapes. So, you know, I'm a little bit older than Jamie, but when I was coming through school and I was taught how to manage for turkeys, we were still taught that they're more of a rural country-type species. They need big areas of undeveloped land that kind of have a mix of wooded and open areas or cropland type things. Nowadays, what we teach our students is completely different, and they are a species that they really are an urban species to as much as they are a wild rural species. And turkeys being aggressive toward people, and especially kids and mail carriers and things like that, is not an uncommon event anymore. And
really?
So, oh, I'm sorry. Go on, Nick.
Well, it's just crazy because I figured that they're more scared of us than we are of them, but they got no fear of my daughter at all.
Yeah, and this is especially true in the spring with the toms or the males. When they start surging with testosterone as they're breeding, they get very aggressive. But a couple of things to do is, if you can, put up some just makeshift fencing to keep them out. And even though turkeys can fly, and they do fly, that they much prefer to walk or run across the landscape. And so that fencing, even though they could fly over the fencing, something as simple as just putting up some ropes maybe 6 inches apart, you know, on a T-post or something like that to keep them out of your yard, that's one thing. Or put up a temporary snowdrift fence or something like that is a possibility. Anytime you see them in the yard, make it as miserable for them to be there as possible. So go out and harass them, maybe spray your garden hose at them, bang pots and pans, throw things at them, things like that. But and be not necessarily, I don't mean aggressive in terms of physically harming them, but be aggressive in terms of chasing after them and chasing them out of the yard as much as you possibly can, so that when next time they come in the yard, they have this concern that, you know, last time I was here, it wasn't that pleasant for me. So anything you can do to either keep them out of the yard through exclusion or chase them out of the yard through harassment will be beneficial and will give you some break. And this is going to eventually dissipate as these turkeys will start to flock together, and they're going to get so large in flocks, they're going to find other places outside from your yard.
There you go. Thanks, Nick, for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Craig and Hudson a chance to join us. Hi, Craig. Thanks for calling.
How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
For the second time in a year, almost the same month or the week of the month, we have seen near our garden an eastern, and excuse my pronunciation, Masawaga rattlesnake. Last year we saw a full-size adult, and this year it was a smaller juvenile. And I got a good picture of it, and I did confirm it. I went on the Internet, and it matched up exactly the pattern. It wasn't a bull snake by any means, because we've seen those as well. But how common is that snake in western Wisconsin?
So, Craig, I'm looking at the Snakes of Wisconsin book that the Department of Natural Resources has available off of their website, and it has a distribution map of that particular snake in the state, description, habitat use, and so on. And I looked at the range map here, and for what they're using for the range of the Massasauga, it would be south of Hudson. And again, that's not to say that you haven't documented one. I'm just out of curiosity, did you see a rattle on the tail?
On the one we saw last year, yes. And the juvenile, it was a little hard to tell because
sure.
He was in the grass. And he exhibited the pretty passive and kind of attitude, unlike the bull snakes and whatever, which can be kind of aggressive. But so it was a pretty laid back snake, but it was sunning itself out in the yard. So
yeah, and the other things to look for on the rattlesnakes will be a triangular shaped head, so it appears as if they have a neck, where other snakes like the fox snake or the milk snake, which can be mistaken for rattlesnakes, they really look to appear to not have a neck. The head is the same size as the body. So assuming that you did get the correct confirmation, that would be a little bit further north than what the range map's dictating here. But as far as how common they are, they're our most endangered snake in the state. Of about 20 plus or minus a few species of snakes, they're the most endangered.
Okay. Well, I did get a pretty good picture of it with my cell phone. I got up real close to the head and I took a picture of it. So I did just to confirm that it actually was one. And we're about miles from the river on St. Croix. And, you know, we've got quite a few snakes in our area there because it's a wooded area on the edge of the property, and it's facing toward the west, so it's a good sunning area near our garden. So
yeah, and they're eating primarily rodents, and they're kind of, their nickname is the swamp rattler. You know, they are found along the major riverways, and again, that's a sighting that you might want to share with the local wildlife biologist. They may not be aware of their documentation in that area, so they might be pretty interested to see that photo and share your observation.
Yep.
Craig, I was going to say, you're also welcome to email the photo to Jamie or me, and we could take a look and see if we can make an identification from your photo.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right, great. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And how would he do that?
Well, my email is ddrake, then the number 2, at wisc.edu.
Or you could probably post it on my Facebook
page. Yeah, Larry's Facebook page. And my email is jlnack at wisc.edu.
Mm-hmm. Or just post on my Facebook page. And I'll, probably a lot of people would like to see that photo.
Yeah.
And no crank emails, please. only legitimate emails.
Thanks, Greg, for calling. And I hope you'll post that. I appreciate it. Cass in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello. I just wanted to find out if I'm in the woods and I encountered a cougar. Can I shoot it?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a good question.
It is. Cass, I'm going to say, as we've talked about earlier on this program and in other programs, that your chance to encounter a cougar is very, very rare. And if you do, I think you probably – I would encourage you to enjoy the encounter as long as you're at a safe distance. But cougars are a protected species in Wisconsin this time, and it would be illegal for you to shoot that cougar unless your life was in imminent danger. And if that was the case – then you would be legal to shoot the cougar. But again, I would encourage you, if you do see a cougar, observe it from a safe distance and enjoy the observation.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, by the way. A question about wildlife or a comment or maybe some experience you've had, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. If you got a cool wildlife photo, post it up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to see that as well. Liz and Delavan up next. Hi, Liz. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. The question I have is kind of went along with the first call, the caller just right before me. It is about cougars. There's been sightings in the lower part of Wisconsin here on and off, and I want to know exactly how dangerous are them. I did look up a couple things about cougars, and I read that they don't normally attack people, that they just try to avoid them. And I was wondering if you had any comments about this.
Yeah, so first of all, I just want to reiterate what David was mentioning, is that this is really, really, really a rare animal in the state. Probably of the 525-some species of wildlife that we have in the state, cougars are going to be one of the rarest, and we don't even have them documented as breeding in the state. What we have is young males that are moving from western populations in South Dakota, entering our state because they're looking for suitable habitat and a mate. And because there are no female cougars that we are aware of or have confirmed, they kind of continue on. So they're very mobile. They don't stay in one place for very long. They just, you know, kind of keep moving. So again, the odds of you encountering a cougar are really rare. And as far as advice, it'd be the same as with a black bear or a wolf. Make yourself appear large. Turn and walk away. Don't run. That can, you know, kick in the chase instinct. And, you know, just
pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, that's really it. But I really don't think it's something that you need to be overly concerned about. Just aware of what to do if by chance you get yourself, you know, in that situation. But it would be a very, very rare thing to encounter.
Carrie on Facebook wonders if you'd comment on wild boar in Wisconsin. We believe, she says, there's evidence of some on our property in Washburn County. The DNR said there are 3 to 6 in that area. However, we've only seen their markings and destruction, no actual pigs.
So, Larry and Jamie, Washburn County is in what part of the state?
If somebody
knows that, but typically, if somebody knows that, just send it in a Facebook thing. But the reason I ask is typically the feral pigs have been located in the southwestern part of the state. Down Crawford County is kind of the epicenter. So if you're in that area, then that's typically where you have the best chance of seeing feral pigs. But the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, along with the United States Department of Agriculture and Wildlife Services, have done a pretty good job of trying to reduce and eradicate feral pigs in the state of Wisconsin. And relative to Texas and some of the southeastern states, we don't have near the problem with feral pigs that those states do, and we don't want to have that kind of a problem because, as you mentioned, Carol, that they are very, very destructive, and what you'll a lot of times see, if you don't see the animals, you'll see their rooting where they stick their snout into the ground, and essentially it's like a plow. They just will root up areas and large, large areas, and they're very destructive toward crops and native plantings and forest management and things like that. So It is
something you can eliminate if you see.
Yes, they are a non-protected species, and you are encouraged to shoot those animals and kill them any time of the year that you come across the feral pigs.
There we go. Mike in Hartford, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I live on a small, it's actually Pike Lake in Hartford, and we've got multiple bald eagles, a couple pairs that nest in the area, but on occasion I see a bird that's just slightly smaller than a bald eagle, and it sits in a huge ash tree in my front yard. And whenever I've looked up its identification, I'm of the opinion that it's an osprey. I'm wondering if that's a possibility. It's black and white, predominantly white on the chest and a little bit on the wings, but it has a very large wingspan, much larger than any kind of a hawk that you would imagine seeing.
Yeah, and Mike, it is very possible. Ospreys are common in Wisconsin, especially around lakes. They're a kind of a sea eagle or a fish-eating, you know, eagle-type bird. They are smaller than bald eagles, but not by a drastic amount. I mean, they're a pretty good-sized bird. And a lot of times you'll see them on platform nests. So they nest on a big mound of sticks. And a lot of times they kind of nest out in the open, whereas eagles will nest in topped white pine trees, for example. These osprey will nest more out in the open on platforms. And the easiest way to see an osprey or to note if it's an osprey is when they're flying, because they have this very distinctive, when their wings are stretched out and they're just gliding on the air, they almost look like the letter M, because they have kind of this peak in the middle of their wing where the joint is, or what appears to be the joint. And if you look up from the bottom, the wing is primarily white, but it's got some black modeling or darker modeling on it. And then they also have this kind of very, almost like a ear, and that's not the exact sound of it. Maybe Jamie can imitate it better than I can. But,
no, that's pretty good.
But and so it is very possible that you do have osprey, for sure.
Yeah, that's the wing is identical to what it looks like, almost like a giant version of like a nighthawk. You know?
Yep. Yeah, that's a great association. Absolutely. So, yep, it sounds like that's what it is, Mike.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Jamie Nack and David Drake from the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, taking a look at the world of wildlife today with our two guests, David Drake and Jamie Nack from the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. Join in with questions or comments or experiences to share at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And let's turn to Kathy in Wauwatosa next. Kathy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question. I was hiking in western Jackson County earlier this morning, and I spotted about 6 turkey vultures dining on some roadside kale. And I'm wondering if they're fairly common that far west. I don't recall ever seeing them. And I was just interested to know about their range. And I'll take the answer off the phone. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Great question, Kathy. And thanks for sharing your observation. Yes, turkey vultures are very common throughout the state. And they are, primarily carrion feeders. So you saw them doing what they do, which is help us clean up the highways complete the cycle. So they're the ones when an animal's died, they're kind of breaking down that carcass and utilizing what they can. So, and they're also very, very large to the keen observer. Once you've noticed their wing shape, it's pretty easy to pick them out as opposed to misidentifying them as a different raptor or an eagle. So they have a little bit of an upward V shape to their wings as they're soaring. And then also at the end of their primaries, they feather out a little bit and look like you can kind of see the individual feathers. So they're fairly easy to identify when they're soaring as well. And depending on the winter, at some point, they would move from Wisconsin. It's typically their summer range, or fall and spring would be included as well. But in the winter, they're going to move south to the southern part of the United States, where they can often be found year-round. But for Wisconsin, if the winter gets severe enough, they will move south. But depending on the winter weather that we have, we may or may not have them.
There we go. Thanks a lot for that call. And on Facebook, we have a photo of from Connie and wondering what kind of snake is it. She found it near Lake Michigan in Oak Creek.
Connie, that snake is a decay snake, or also called a northern brown snake, and it's one of our smaller snakes. Doesn't get much bigger than the one in the picture.
It's really small.
And yeah, feeding on invertebrates and insects and things like that. Really harmless. It would be difficult for it to open its mouth large enough to even bite you if it wanted to. But pretty fun snake to be able to observe and see. And they're also fairly common. So yeah, northern brown or a decay snake.
Very cool photo. Thank you for sending it. Judy and Custer, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a couple of questions about mink. The other night, I heard this snarl hissing outside our patio door, and our cat was very interested in that. And I turned on the outside lights, and there was a mink. And it was a nice chocolate brown color, and it had that same mean, ugly face that I know that mink have. And I wondered, one, how common are they in this area? And two, some people were surprised that we'd have a mink because they said that, well, you don't have any water around here. And I thought, well, no, but otters need the water, not mink. And three, I'm wondering whether it might be how likely it would be that it would be an escapee, because there had been a mink ranch around here in the 50s.
So, you know, good question. So let's talk through some of them. The mink you described pretty well. They're chocolate brown. The wild mink are chocolate brown with a white throat patch. And they're a member of the weasel family, just like the otter is. So they have the same kind of torpedo shape. And the person who asked you about wondering about the mink being in your area because there wasn't water nearby, that's a good question, because mink do associate with water and wetland habitat and river corridors and things like that. They will feed on birds and nests, but also a lot of the aquatic animals, so fish, crayfish, frogs, and one of their top prey species are actually muskrats. So they'll often have dens or homes really close to muskrat lodges. So if you have any of that type of habitat nearby, it's not out of the ordinary to think that they might travel those river or wetland corridors and find themselves in a backyard at some point.
We are close to a swamp.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There are no fish there, but there are turtles and frogs and sometimes muskrats. Not recently, not many.
Yeah, muskrat populations kind of ebb and flow every few years. They'll kind of end up eating themselves out of house and home and then rebuild populations. So, it's a good observation.
And then the last question I think she had was, could it be an escapee?
Oh, yeah. So when people farm ranch mink, they come in a lot of different color combinations for the garment industry. And we have a mink in our department, in fact, that was a road-killed mink that's jet black. And that's the thought with that one, is that it came from, it was an escapee. But the fact that it sounded like the ranch that you were talking about has been defunct for a number of years, that would be a long time for a mink to survive. So they probably only live a couple of years in the wild, and especially as an escaped animal without some of those survival strategies, I would not think that that was an escaped animal.
There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Judy, for calling. And Gordy in Taylor County, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Last night at our monthly bird club meeting, a person reported that a friend up in the Rhinelander area found pet collars beneath an eagle nest, and immediately a couple of members jumped on that saying, oh, that's just an urban legend that's been going around forever. So I'm wondering, David and Jamie, has there ever been any evidence of pet collars being found beneath an eagle nest?
So, Gordy, I also remember that story for a number of years was going around, and I thought that that was true, but I am now questioning for sure. But If you want to send me an email, I'll track that down and get that reply to you. I know who we can contact to get that answer. So, Gordy, my email again is jlnack@wisc.edu, and I'd be happy to reply if I can get an email from you.
All right. Okay, very good. Thanks, James.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Yeah, that story I've heard forever. That has been...
Well, that's just it. I've heard it for so many times. Now I can't recall what the background is on it. So,
Liz and Kohler has something for us. Hi, Liz. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I recently learned about a new species that's a hybrid between, I think, an eastern gray wolf and a coyote, and they're calling it the coy wolf. And from what I learned, it's becoming quite common in northern Illinois. I wondered if you could comment on whether it's being sighted in Wisconsin at all and if there's any studies about this species. I'll take my response off air. Thanks.
Hi, Liz. Thank you very much for your question. And I'm trying to think back now. Adrian Wideven, who for the long time was the primary wolf biologist in the state of Wisconsin, along with a couple other people, he has a really nice documentation about the coy wolf mix and things like that. And I think what typically, if I recall this correctly, and Adrian, if you're listening and I get this wrong, excuse me, but if I recall this correctly, it was more with the eastern wolf population that they were mixing with coyotes for that coy wolf. So it was much more of an eastern, it's really kind of a hybrid, if you will. And not to say it won't happen here, but in Illinois, we don't have eastern wolves into this part of the state. This part of the country is the Great Wolf or the Great Lakes wolf population, and typically those wolves don't come far enough south into northern Illinois that you'd have a sustainable breeding population where they'd mix with coyotes. A lot of times what you have instead is you have maybe a coyote-dog mix, and especially on some of the Indian reservations, you get a lot more of this hybridization between wild canids, like coyotes or wolves up north, and semi-feral or domestic dogs. And the only way you can really tell in your area or any other areas is genetically. You'd have to take some kind of a genetic sample and see how that traces back. So, based on where you are, Liz, I'm going to suggest that there's probably not a coy wolf that you're looking at. It might be a Siberian breed or Malamute or some other breed that maybe has wolf-like appearances or coyote-like appearances. And if anything, it would be a coyote hybridization with a domestic dog more so than a wolf-coyote breed.
Pete in Saratoga, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I just got my past a little bit. UWSP grad, wildlife management. But I don't work the field. I just do goofy stuff. But
who doesn't do goofy stuff?
Yeah. Last autumn, about this time, I was going off to work at 11 to 7, and I walked out my drive. And heard a loud growling off to my side. So I took a couple steps further, and the growling continued. And then took a couple steps more further, and then the growling was in front of me. So I'm wondering what that was. I've hunted bear before in my past. I'm only thinking it possibly was maybe a fisher. Is that possible?
Boy, that's really hard. There's a lot of animals that will have, you know, some sort of alarm or growling type call. And whether they were making that noise because you were present or because there was another member of the same species present that they were, you know, having a confrontation with, if it was at this time of the year, it's certainly not breeding behavior. But boy, it's really hard. I mean, raccoons will make some sounds that can sound like growling. Bobcats have more of a higher pitched kind of screeching. I wouldn't necessarily call it growling. Fishers are so elusive and so afraid of humans so quickly to flee that I just kind of wonder about it being a fisher. But, you know, raccoons would be fairly common and around the home. But boy, there's a lot of things that could be. David, you got some.
I was going to say the same thing Jamie was going to say, but you would think if it was a bear, you know, that's a large enough animal that you
bears
would see
gonna,
that.
Yeah,
also.
They're going to pop. They're going to do the jaw popping and huff, you know, kind of a puffing or huffing noise.
Yeah.
But I would think that, you know, the fact that you couldn't see the animal, even as you were moving around and it was moving around you, that it had to be something kind of maybe a medium size. So that would be, like Jamie said, a raccoon. I mean, it possibly could be a fisher, depending on where you were in the state. But, you know, think maybe more of a medium-sized animal than large.
Large, okay. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Cedar waxwings migrations. Nicholas wondered about them. Are they... They sometimes visit the shrubs on their way through.
Larry, we got about 15 seconds till noon. Should we wait until after the break on this, or try to jam it in? Are we okay?
Actually, we've got about 15 more seconds.
All right. So, with cedar waxwings, yes, they are very common. One of the earliest returning migrating birds, and they are coming through now to start heading south as well.
There we go. We'll talk some more maybe about cedar waxwings and a whole lot more about our Wisconsin wildlife as we visit with Jamie Nack and David Drake. Stay with us. News is next. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at the world of wildlife today with our two guests, David Drake and Jamie Nack of the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the UW-Madison. Always great to have them come by, and certainly I'm really pleased to have you listening in. And if you have a question or a comment or maybe a wildlife experience to share, join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org or post a photo or a question on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show and you can do that as well. And we were talking about cedar waxwings just before our news break. And I know, David, you wanted to add something to that.
I just wanted to add my favorite thing about cedar waxwings is they actually get drunk sometimes because they in the springtime when they come up, because as I mentioned, they're one of the earliest returning migratory birds, and they feed on berries. And when those berries will ferment, as the nights get below 32 degrees and the days get above 32 degrees, this berry goes through a freeze-thaw. It actually ferments, and as those birds eat the berries, I mean, they actually literally get drunk. And so it's kind of an interesting thing amongst the wildlife world.
There you go, drunken cedar waxwings.
Yep. Look out for them.
Let's go to Eli in Madison next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, this is actually Mom calling on behalf of Eli.
Okay.
So we have a question about wolves, and we'd like to say that this is Eli's favorite show.
Oh, great.
He loves the driveway moments to this show. So anyways, but we are wondering, wolves in Wisconsin, one, if they swim, and two, how they hunt their prey, and we'll take our answer off the air.
So. All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Well, Eli and Mom, thanks for the great question. I would say, yes, wolves certainly can swim, although they probably prefer to keep their feet dry. So they're going to swim across rivers, maybe small lakes, streams, in order to basically to get to the other side, because it's probably part of their habitat. They have a pretty large home range, which contain, you know, undoubtedly is going to contain some rivers and water corridors. So they certainly can swim across rivers just like a deer can, but it's not their, you know, probably not their preferred means of transportation. And I have also watched, granted this was a Western video in Western United States, but wolves trying to catch a young elk, and they were certainly swimming in the river and trying to catch the elk that were using the river as hopefully a safe zone, but the wolves were swimming after them. So certainly they will swim, but again, not a preferred method. And then as far as how they bring down their prey, for the most part, wolves are a pack animal, and a pack can be three or more animals. We do have some wolves that operate alone, and they are probably focusing on smaller prey. So beaver, snowshoe hare, rabbits, species like that. When they operate as a pack, they can take a larger animal like a deer. And even in that case, they're probably focusing on some of the older, younger, or injured deer, but could take a healthy deer too if the right circumstance presented itself. So they're going to have utilize a circular approach to, pinning the animal down and then attacking it. Generally, I believe wolves are going to attack from behind from and then drag the prey down.
There you go. Was the elk safe in the river?
The elk did get away. Yeah, it was a pretty intense video. I think it was out of Yellowstone. It was a 10-minute video, but yeah.
The elk got away.
The elk got away.
They don't always get away, though. Otherwise, we wouldn't have any wolves out there. Bill in La Crosse. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. Now that we're in the Badger State, I hardly ever hear of anybody seeing badgers in the wild. Where would you find them?
Yeah, they're in every county, aren't they, of the state?
Yep. Bill, that's a good question. Do you know why we're called the Badger State, Bill?
Well, I believe it was because the miners down in the southwest part of the thing were nicknamed badgers because they were mining underground.
Yep, that's right. All the lead miners, they would dig into the hillsides, and they looked like they were badgers digging in. So
where
absolutely.
Are the real badgers?
Well, the real badgers are typically found in areas where you have grassy prairie-type areas with more loamy or organic soil, so it's easier for them to dig through. And they eat a lot of small burrowing rodents like 13-line ground squirrels and moles and chipmunks and things like that. So you also find them in areas where you have a lot of those species. And so they are very common. I shouldn't say very common. They are probably relatively common in the state of Wisconsin. And I will say that if you are in the Middleton, Wisconsin area, just west of Madison, and you go out to Pope Farm Park off of Old Sauk Road, at least a couple weeks ago, there was a badger seen there at Pope Farm Park, and I saw it myself. And so it was a really neat thing to see. But I know I was not able to attend this, but I know Jamie went to Jimmy Doyle's master's defense, and Jimmy worked with Dr. Tim Van Dielen in our department on a badger study. And
yeah, so there'll be so one of the take-home messages with badgers, I mean, your question is one that we hear a lot in the wildlife world. We don't know a lot about our state animal, and that's very true. So there was a recent graduate student that actually trapped and collared, or I shouldn't say collared, they used an embedded radio telemetry device that was just surgically placed in the animal, just below subcutaneously. Anyway, and they followed about 13 badgers around looking at basic ecology. We still don't know or have a good grasp on the basic ecology of these animals. So they were able to gather home range estimates and habitat use patterns. And as David said, you know, they typically are in grasslands, but also in agricultural areas. And there was some significant distribution along kind of roadways was an important habitat component for them. And that probably has to do with their use of roadways for denning locations. So they also anecdotally reported that, you know, badgers seem to prefer south-facing hillsides for den locations, and you might imagine that they're going to have the snow be free of snow early on, and that you know, typically their prey items are animals that are burrowing, so they're often active at night.
That's why you don't see them.
Yeah, from dusk to dawn, and basically they're looking for rodents that are active during the day, but in their burrows at night, they sniff them out, dig them out, and consume them. So we did get some good information from his study, but I think he only mentioned about a dozen studies on badger ecology throughout the country. So lots more information needed.
There we go.
Good information. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I think Scott Craven told me once they're in every county.
They are. Yeah. So that, you know, we talked about that survey, citizen science surveys. There's a wildlife rare mammal form that citizens can also report. And David and I hear quite a bit of observations of badgers when we attend the annual Farm Technology Day show, because farmers are often the ones that see the badgers and they'll come up to us. And I had a gentleman this year that pulled out his smartphone and showed me a picture of a badger sticking its head out of a den. So they're good eyes and ears on the landscape. So we do know they exist in every county of the state.
Mike in Rice Lake. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, a question about the swifts and a quick story. I always wondered about swifts or typical birds like that. How actually do they fly into the chimney without colliding? How do they roost once they're in there? And is there any video anywhere that would show that? And the story is, this spring, I live in the country, and I don't purposely keep a yard light. I like it pitch black. So I had to go to work that night, and I walked out of the house about 11 o'clock, and it was pitch black. And while I was out there to keep it neat, I thought to take care of business quick. And I'm standing there, and about 10 seconds later, I hear this I don't know how to describe it, except it just shook the air in front of me. I knew I was face to face with a bear. And I got in the house really fast. And I got the spotlight, and there was a bear about 6 feet up in a tree, a big boy trying to get at my bird feeder. And I'd never, on any of the wildlife shows I've ever seen about bears or anything, ever known one to, I don't know how to describe it, it's like a wolf is the closest, you know, I could come to the noise, but it really shook the air.
Yeah, they huff and they start to pop their jaws, and I've experienced that myself in the dark, and it's a pretty eerie feeling.
Yeah.
So, but your question with the chimney swifts, they make a mud nest on the inside of the chimney. So they use saliva and mud and various materials to build that nest. So it's kind of a half-shaped cup nest that adheres to the side of the chimney. And some things to keep in mind and good information to share that if you'd like to be able to provide your chimney to chimney swifts, then you want to, if it's a masonry or a clay tiled chimney, you want to keep the top open and the damper closed from April through October. And obviously you're not going to use it for a fire. So that's the time when the chimney swifts are here, and they could use that chimney then to roost and to raise their young or have nests if they select. But if you have a metal chimney, those should be permanently capped to prevent birds and other wildlife from being trapped. So they do drop into those chimneys, but if they have slick sides, it can be very difficult for them to come out. So they might be using, you know, their feet to adhere to the side and climb their way out. So you want to be careful over what type of chimney you have and that you're not creating a trap.
And the only other thing I'll say is if you do not have a chimney cap on your chimney, it is likely you might get a raccoon or family raccoons in there at some point because they're cavity nesters and they are very common inhabitants of chimneys. So it's be aware if you leave your chimney open for chimney swifts, you might have something other than chimney swifts.
And another option is there are diagrams to build chimney swift towers, and some of the state parks are doing this as a group or a friends group activity
project.
Yep. So definitely research that. So much like building bat houses or bird houses, you can build a chimney swift tower in your local urban area, and maybe that's something you want to lead that, and that can certainly help in getting your bird certification or your Bird City USA certification for your town.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. So all the talk about black bears reminded me of an experience I had with black bears camping at Black Lake in northern Wisconsin with another guy. We were on a fishing trip and woke up in the night and heard some racket right outside, and there was a black bear just going through what we didn't have any food out, but it was, and it walked over to the tent, and at that point I got my knife out because he walked to the tent and stood up on its hind legs and looked right, Jerry Carbon, right in the eye. He was that tall, and I had my knife out to make a new door in the back.
I was going to say, the knife was for the new door, right?
And that black bear went and just dropped down and went right next door. And we'd already met the couple that was next door. It was a young couple had just gotten married, and they were on their honeymoon, and they were camping. And they had left. We didn't know it until the next morning. They had left their food out on picnic table.
Oh.
And they're in this small tent. And the bear gets up on top of the picnic table. And this is dark, of course. So you can imagine what they saw, this bear. they were up at the crack of dawn, and they were packing up, and
they were out of there, going to the hotel.
And bears don't have very good eyesight, so a lot of times they'll stand up on their rear feet or, you know, stand straight up because they're trying to get a better sense of the smell in the area. And so people sometimes, obviously, when you see this great big bear standing straight up, you know, it can be a little unnerving. You take it as kind of an aggressive stance, but they're really just trying to figure out what's out in front of them and around them because they can't see so well.
Yeah, that was quite an experience.
But I'm sure that the honeymoon couple were thrilled to have you and your buddy over there jumping over next to their campsite.
Ann in Fish Creek, it's your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Great show. Thank you. Yesterday, I was looking through some pictures my husband had taken, and I spotted a bird I could not identify up here in Fish Creek, and it was a bird on the dock, local town dock. And since I had the picture, I was trying to identify it as a Wisconsin bird, so it took a while, but finally found it, and it was a black-crowned night heron. And when I looked at the map to see where they are, there's nothing anywhere near north in Wisconsin that shows the very southern part of the state as having them as summer residents. And I'm just wondering if these are, if they're moving our way during the summer, or if people are reporting seeing them up here, or if they're moving into the area. It was a really beautiful picture of a really cool looking bird I've never seen.
And this is Fish Creek in Door County, I take it.
Correct.
Yeah. So I had done some work up there with cormorants before, and for sure it's not a cormorant.
Positive.
Okay.
I had the pictures right next to each other.
And so you I have seen yellow-crowned night herons up there, and black-crowned night herons, obviously, as you mentioned, are in the state. And it's possible that you had a black-crowned night heron. I mean, if you saw it on your dock
and you had
a picture of it, it's not. There are not many other things that look like a black-crowned night heron. So it's very possible you have it up there. And I know that yellow-crowned night herons are very common up there in the summertime, because I've seen many of their rookeries. So that's pretty neat you saw it.
Yeah. It was great to see. I'm hoping we get some more to move in.
Yeah.
Is that one to post on eBird?
It could be.
Yeah. Certainly if it's...
On eBird?
Yeah.
Yep.
I'd put it on eBird.
Nice close-up pictures.
Yeah, so if you go to Wisconsin eBird, just Google Wisconsin eBird, you can post it, and if you have the picture, put that up, and if you would also post the location as specific as you can, and the day and time.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. And the site is eBird.
I think just
how do I get
well, do it? Just do an internet search for Wisconsin, and then a space and eBird.
Got it. Perfect. Right. I'll put it up there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to John, excuse me, in West Bend. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I was calling in response to the person who called from Hartford about seeing ospreys.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I live in West Bend, just 100 or so yards from the Milwaukee River. And just, a few weeks ago, I was out on my deck, and I was looking, and I saw a bird basically circling, gaining altitude over the river with a fish in its talons. And yeah, at first I thought, well, it's a bald eagle because I've seen them out there before, but I'm looking at it and like, no, it's a lighter color and it's not quite as big. So I think it is at an osprey. So I went, got my binoculars, and sure enough, it's an osprey. And I even identified the fish was a sucker. Well, I've seen a sucker in its talon. So.
Extra points.
So
yep, there. And a lot of times we have osprey and bald eagles together in the same area. That as an osprey is fishing and is going back to the nest or somewhere with a fish in its talons, you'll see bald eagles sometimes harass that osprey to the point where the osprey will drop the fish, and then the bald eagle will go down and pick that fish up. And so it's a pretty kind of a neat little drama, aerial drama to watch.
Well, I was kind of excited to see the osprey because as far as I know, they are actually more sensitive to pollution and human disturbance than bald eagles. So I don't know if I'm correct on that, but so to see an osprey over the Milwaukee River, I guess just shows that, hey, that their river's, making even more of a comeback. So
yeah, they're also pretty adaptable and pretty habituated to humans. So, you see a lot of times, I'm familiar with ospreys and they're coastal waterway out east, and you'll see them on just about every one of the navigational posts out there. They've nested on them, and you've got heavy boat traffic going back and forth, and they don't seem to be bothered one bit by it.
Very cool. Thanks a lot, John, for calling. And Heather, thank you for calling from Somerset. Hi.
Good afternoon, now it is.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough several years ago, my husband and children and I were doing some road hunting for partridge or ruffed grouse in the Blue Hills north of Bruce, Wisconsin, up in Rusk County, and we saw a badger up there one day, and it was amazing to see one in real life. My question was, though, as I was driving home today, I saw a red fox, and he was actually quite big, trotting through a farmer's field, and I'm just kind of wondering, what's their range? Do they hibernate? Do I need to worry about my small dogs? That kind of thing.
Well, Somerset's pretty far north. So.
Yeah, yeah. Good question. Red fox, there's two species of fox in Wisconsin, the red and the gray fox. The red fox is distributed throughout the state, and they prefer habitat that's a mix of agriculture and forested landscape, and certainly travel along fence lines through farm fields. They're mousers. They're eating probably rabbit size and smaller, and they do not hibernate. They're active year-round, feeding on, you know, those animals. And the only time they really utilize a den is in the spring when they have their young. They breed in January and February is when they're mating up. And then they'll have their young 2 months after their gestation period is like a dog. So it's 2 months, 60 days or so. And they'll have, you know, 4 to 6 pups approximately. And, you know, that's a... You know, about their habits.
Yeah, and they're very, very common in the state, especially in those more open, grassy, kind of shrubby type areas, but also in urbanized areas.
Yeah, and your question about being nervous about pets, I don't know what size pets you have, but for the most part, that's not something that's just not a prey item for them. Much, much smaller prey than that.
Wonderful. Well, you guys have a great day. I love the show.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling. And we have, let's see, Bob and Fond du Lac. Hi, thanks for calling. And I think we did we lose him? We can lose him.
Looks like Bob's question was, how do cougars get here in the first place? So
yeah, let's just take the...
We'll take the question. So on very, very, very rare occasions, that some of them take the Greyhound bus. Occasionally they'll rent a car, but in the vast majority of them, they walk here. So they may trot a little bit and run occasionally, but they get here on their own accord, on their own four paws. And again, as Jamie mentioned earlier in the show, it's the young males that are getting pushed out of the territory. And they are seeking out areas where other cougars are not, because they have to try to establish their own territory. So they just keep moving from South Dakota. You know, they're moving east, west, and north, and probably to a lesser extent south. But they will walk.
Yeah, and it's not unusual. There are some animals that will do something other than that. I remember Scott
the prairie dog, right? They got here in the hay bale.
Yeah, it came all the way from out west in a big round hay bale.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's armadillo sightings from time to time, too, and those are being moved in, trucking equipment or through transportation. And I think I remember Scott sharing a Roadrunner story, and, you know, so it happens.
Well, that prairie dog, you know, as an animal that loves to be with other prairie dogs, was by itself and lived at least 2 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
At least two more years before it disappeared. So
that's pretty neat.
Kind of neat, but it's sort of a sad life for the prairie dog. And I tell you what, you guys, this has been a lot of fun. You'll come back in about next month, won't you?
Yeah.
Whenever you invite us back, we'll be back.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today. David Drake, wildlife specialist with UW Extension and associate professor of forest and wildlife ecology. Jamie Nack, wildlife outreach specialist in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. And then we'll be back. We'll do it again. We had a lot of fun. Tomorrow at 11, travel writer Mary Bergen talks about some great Wisconsin art tours to take and some hidden Wisconsin sculpture gardens to take in. And then Rick Sini of FairCompare.com shares etiquette for travelers and flight attendants, as well as some great airfare deals. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.